Today we have the privilege to not just begin 2024, but we begin a new Sefer, Sefer Shmot. In Sefer Shmot, the story moves from it being a story about individuals, about the Jewish family, and it becomes a discussion about the creation of Am Yisrael, of the Jewish nation. The Ramban explains that the book of Shmot is the Sefer, the theme of Shmot is that it's a Sefer of Galut v'Geula. It's the story of the exile, when we find ourselves in Mitzrayim, with a worsening situation and the persecutions intensifying. But it leads to the redemption of the Jewish people, which culminates ultimately with the building of the Mishkan. When we build the Mishkan, that's when we get back to the level of the Avot and Imahot. That's how the Ramban explains the theme of the Sefer. I wanted to explore and focus our attention on Moshe Rabbeinu, because we're introduced in Parsha Shmot, of course, to Moshe. And when little Moshe was placed in a basket on page 296, during that dark period of time in Egypt, we know that it's Paro's daughter who discovers the basket. The Pasuk says, Pasuk Vav, right in the middle of the page, Vatiftach Vatireo et Hayeled. The daughter of Paro opens up the basket and she sees the Yeled. Vihinei nar boche. And there's a lad that's crying. Vatachmololov, she has mercy on him. Vatomer miyaldea ifrimzeh. And she says, this must be one of the Hebrews. And the pasuk is strange in that it refers to the little baby Moshe, first as a na'ar, as a boy. And then it says, he's a yeled. Vihinei nar boche. Yeled is like a child or an infant. Nar is a little bit of an older child or a boy. So which one is he? Is he a yeled or is he a na'ar? Also, how does she know that he's Jewish? She says, Miyalde Ivrim Zeh. She hears him crying and she says he's Jewish. So what did his kvetching sound so Jewish? Is that why that she knew who he was? What was it about his crying that made her realize that he's Jewish? Now, you could just say simply that she put two and two together. Why would anyone leave a baby in a basket, you know, in the water there? So she assumed that this was left by a Jewish family because of the decrees at that time. The decree that any baby boy would need to be thrown into the water, into the Nile. But the Chizkuni has a beautiful explanation. He says that when it says Na'ar, says v'hinei nar boche, that it's not referring to Moshe. That first she sees the yeled, which is Moshe. V'hinei nar boche, when it says nar, that's referring to Aaron. Aaron was the boy who was 3 years old, who was crying for his brother. And that's how you have to read the pasuk. Vatiftach v'terei tayelet. She saw the little baby Moshe. V'nei nar boche, when she saw that the way the brother was crying, and she saw the empathy and the care and the kindness, which are uniquely Jewish traits, she said, "Ah, miyaldei Ivrim zeh. This must be a Jewish baby." So this is a really brilliant explanation to explain how it's a yelet and an ar, because it's referring to two different people, and that's exactly. When Paro's daughter hears the boy crying for his baby brother, that's the identifying quality of a Jew. And this is something that we all know, that Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, that we're guarantors for one another, and we stick up for each other. And Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, not just do we care about one another and stick up for each other and support one another, but and it's a high level of responsibility that we feel, but Kol Yisrael Arevim, Arev means to be a guarantor, but it also means to be sweet. So Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh perhaps also means that you should see the sweetness and the goodness of your fellow Jews. Because it's easier to love. Of course you have to love fellow Jews. Some people are harder to love though. So that's why you should try to see the sweetness and goodness of the other person. It'll make it easier. It'll make it easier to love the person. At the bottom of 296... Okay, let's keep moving along, then we'll get thoughts and questions. So it says, Vayigdal Hayeled Pasuk Yud, that we know that Moshe is raised in the palace, although in the early years he was nursed by his mother, which was an interesting arrangement. Vayigdal hayelad, the yelad grows up. Vatidiyehu lebat paro v'yila leben, and after then he's brought into the palace of Paro and given to the daughter of Paro. Vatikra shmo Moshe, vatomer kimin amayim mishituhu. And she says that because he was drawn from the water, she calls him Moshe. Why does she call him Moshe? She should call him Mashui, that he was drawn. So the Mefarshim explained that he was drawn, but he has to also go ahead now, and that gives him an hitchayvut. He has a responsibility to do something with his life. He was saved, he's a survivor, so now Moshe is that he has to save others. He has to go ahead and save others. And that's, in terms of we are the surviving generation, and we're here now, and we have great blessings and opportunities. So now that's an obligation placed upon us to help support others. Vahi bayamim ahem, and it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe. Wait a second, the previous pasuk already said Vayigdal Hayelad. See, he grew up twice. Rashi asked that question and says the first one is Lakoma in terms of physical stature, Vasheni Ligadula, and the second one was for greatness, Sheminohu Paro al Beito. That Paro had appointed him in a position of leadership in the palace. Another possible related explanation is to say that Vayigdal Vayigdal, the first Vayigdal is physical, and the second Vayigdal is not that he was appointed a position of leadership, although in addition to that, perhaps the second Vayigdal is in a sense of maturity, of thinking about who he is and what his responsibilities are as a person, and what he needs to do with his life. So the first Vayigdal is that he just grows up, and the second Vayigdal is that he grows up as a mensch, as an individual with his responsibilities. Vayetze el achav, he goes out to his brethren. Vayar b'sivlotam, and he sees their suffering. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me'achav. And he sees an Egyptian man striking a Hebrew man from his brothers. Vayifen ko v'ko, he looks this way and that way. Vayar ki ein ish, and he sees that there's no ish. Vayached ha-mitzri v'etmeneu b'chol, and he strikes the Egyptian, and he hides him in the earth, in the sand. How does Moshe demonstrate leadership here? What does this mean, vayar ki ein ish? The Malbim says that he looked around, and he saw no witnesses. Maybe there were a few Jews around, but there were no Mitzrim, there were no Egyptians. And according to this, so Moshe demonstrates leadership by not just reacting impulsively and impetuously, but he thinks about it and he says, okay, it's great to have a desire to help a fellow Jew, but I need to think about, okay, strategically, practically, how am I going to pull this off? So Vayar Kienish, and then he goes ahead and he takes care of things. Rashi gives another explanation and says that there was a prophetic element here. Middle of the column, right-hand column, Vayar ki ein ish, she'ein ish atid latzeit mimenu, she'id gayar. He saw that nothing good's going to come out of this Egyptian. And according to Rashi, that Moshe's a leader in the sense of Vayar ki ein ish, he doesn't just worry about the here and now, but he thinks about what are the implications of my actions going forward. Well, what's going to be the collateral implications and ramifications and consequences? And so he saw, right, that nothing good is going to come out of it. He's looked into the future, and that's when he killed the Egyptian to save the Jew. The Ksav Kabbalah, Rav Mecklenburg, says, Vayar ki ein ish, that there was no one else, and there was no international body of justice that was going to ensure fairness and justice here. So there's no justice. There's nobody else who's doing anything. There's no international body to rely on. So he looked around, and there's no other individuals. So v'yar keinish b'makum sheinish tishtadel yod ish. That's when you have to step up to be a person to take charge. But perhaps there's one other explanation, because these three explanations these teach us the different elements of Moshe's leadership. That to not act impulsively, but logically. Number two, to not just think about, okay, what the situation here is, but okay, how are my words and actions and choices going to resonate and what are going to be the implications in the future. And the third thing is okay, you know, what else is being done? Are there other people doing this? You know, is it possible to delegate this? And so Vayar Kienish, he saw that nobody else was taking charge. And there really was nobody else, so that's why he got involved. But perhaps there was another idea, which we maybe once learned, that what does it mean, Vayifen Ko Vako? Vayar Kienish. That really this is, here is an individual who, when you think about it, he was a Jew, of course, but he grew up in the palace of Paro. And so there's a question of identity for Moshe Rabbeinu. Who am I? Who am I as a person, and what is my value system? So perhaps that's what it's saying over here when it says Vayifen Ko Vako, that he's not just looking outside, looking around, but he's looking inside. Vayar Ki Ein Ish, he sees that he can no longer have this conflict where he's wavering back and forth. Is he an Egyptian? Is he a Jew? And it's really Moshe's identity is the question here. He's a Jew who grew up in the palace of Paro. Vayifen Ko Vako, Vayar Ki Ein Ish. He sees that he can no longer live with this sense of conflict, because then who is he? Vayachet HaMitzri. He kills the Mitzri. It's not only that he killed the real Mitzri who was beating upon the Jew, but Vayachet HaMitzri, he beat down the Mitzri within him. He realized that, of course, that he realized that he's Jewish. That's his identity. That's his history. That's his future. And he was able to strike down the Mitzri within him, to be able to go on to the leader that he was. So this, of course, resonates with us. You know, it's January 1st, 2024. Are we Jewish? Are we American? Who was it? Was it Henry Kissinger who said to Golda Meir, right? That first I'm an American. Then I'm a Secretary of State, and then I'm a Jew. And Golda Meir said, "Yeah, you're exactly right. Just in Israel, we read from right to left, and so it just goes in the other order."
That was in the Golda Meir
movie. And so that's something that resonates with us as living in America, but always maintaining our identity as Jews. Rav Soloveitchik famously said that this is always a long-running tension that we have, all the way back from Avram Avinu. Avram said, "Ger v'toshav, anochi imachem." I'm a stranger and a citizen. When he's negotiating with the Chittites over the burial place for Sarah, he says, "I'm a ger v'toshav." A ger is that he's a stranger with his own set of values. V'toshav, but he's a citizen of the world. And we have these dual components, and both of them have value for us. We have universalistic principles. We share the planet with other people. We identify with the needs of society, and certainly with America, we're proud Americans. At the same time, however, and that complements, it goes together with our identity, and of course, the priority as Jews, we're a ger, we have a different set of values. There are values in the country that we embrace, and there are values that we don't embrace, and we have to make it clear and think about Vayachet HaMitzri. There are times that we have to be Vayachet HaAmerikai. We have to not, God forbid, we're not striking or harming anyone, but it means we have to, within us, internally, right, we have to sometimes push away the American influences and reassert that commitment to our values.
Do we know how old he was at this point?
Not exactly. Now, there's a few things that happened, Miriam. A few things that happened here, leading up to God's revelation at the burning bush. That's really the question you have to ask is, you know, like with Avraham, why does Hashem choose Avraham? The Mefarshim discuss it. Similarly here, why does Hashem choose Moshe Rabbeinu? So we already highlighted a few different elements of Moshe. Number one, he was raised in a home that shows that arevut, that responsibility for one another. The way Aaron was crying for him and the way the family took care of him. We see here already he's demonstrating leadership qualities. Vayar Ki Ein Ish in the different ways that we described. But there's three different incidents here in Perek Bet. And Professor Nechama Leibowitz points this out, that the first one is where you have the Egyptian beating upon the Jew. The second one is where you have, right, the next day, what happens? It says he goes outside, V'nei shnei anashim ivrim nitzim. There's two Jews who are fighting with one another. And Moshe gets involved. He says, L'arash alamata kereyacha. And they have a strong response to him. The third incident is after Moshe runs away from Egypt. He runs away from Egypt because Paro and the Egyptian authorities and police find out about what he had done to the Egyptian and some of the decisions that he was making to side him to align himself with the Jewish people. So he runs away to Midian, and then the whole story happens there in Midian, where you have the seven daughters who are trying to water and feed their flock, and there are other shepherds that are bullying these daughters. Vayaka Moshe Vayoshian, it says in Pasuk Yizayin, Moshe gets up and he saves the day, Vayashk Etzonam, and he waters their sheep. What's the significance of these three different episodes? First one is an Egyptian is beating upon the Jew, then it's a Jew fighting with another Jew, and then it's these shepherds that are bullying these girls. So the first thing that Nechama Leibowitz says is that each one is more difficult than the other. Right? When you have somebody from another family beating upon your family, of course the instinct is to protect your family. And the Egyptian beating upon the Jew, okay, maybe it wasn't so simple for Moshe as we touched on just a moment ago, but look, this is an Egyptian beating upon a Jew, it's easy for Moshe Rabbeinu to step up. The second one, when it's a Jew fighting against another Jew, so then here, you know, then you might say, oh, let them fight it out, right? People enjoy when they go to a hockey game. What's the fun part of the game is when the hockey players start fighting with one another. That's the one sport where it's kind of part of the culture. It's part of the sport. Yeah, they'll give out penalties, but really there's a brawl. There might be one or two brawls a game, from what I recall. I haven't watched hockey too much recently, but in basketball and baseball, when a brawl happens, that's a much more unusual thing. In hockey, people are fighting with one another, and the crowd gets all excited about it. It's part of the game. So some people have this approach when it comes to Jewish community. Two people are fighting. What's the problem? So it's a little bit harder for a person to intervene and to also to try to bring shalom, which of course we should do. And it's very, very wrong when people are fighting in the community. And the third thing is where you have it's not a Mitzri hitting an Ivri. It's not an Ivri hitting an Ivri. It's a Nachri. It's a non-Jew hitting or harming or threatening another Nachri, another non-Jew. That's even harder. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just intervene in the first case, but even in the second case and even in the third case. But moreover, when we think about what are the three responsibilities of a Jewish leader, and all of you are leaders, each in your own way, so the first one is that we have to fight against anti-Semitism, right? And we're concerned in recent weeks, in recent period of time, the uptick in anti-Semitism. And that's something of great concern for us. So that's the first episode that represents anti-Semitism. And that's the role of a Jewish leader to fight and combat against anti-Semitism. The second thing is, the responsibility of a Jewish leader is to do what? Is to promote Achdut. In internal peace and harmony and respect of one another, so that we can get along as a people. And that's the civil unity, Shalom and Achdut, that's symbolized by the second incident. And the third incident, is the third role of a Jewish leader, which is to ensure that our community and the Jewish people are a light unto the nations. That we, as we said before, right, we're not just a ger, but we're a toshav. And that we want to bring Jewish values to the world. And we want to be leaders who show a sense of responsibility, not just to our own community, but to others as well. Because we care about all human beings are created in the image of God. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, he becomes a leader, he's chosen perhaps a leader of Klal Yisrael, because he excels and distinguishes himself in these three areas. It's not just these three random things that happened, But each one is more of a chiddush than the other. But beyond that, it's three areas. It's fighting anti-Semitism, it's promoting Achdut, and then it's also caring about others, that Israel is a light unto the nations. It makes a Kiddush Hashem. So that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, after these three incidents, let's keep moving. And then I know Nechama and Chana, you have some thoughts, but let's move for a little bit more. So it says that Moshe haya roa es son Yitro chotno kohen Midyan, that Moshe was shepherding the flock of his father-in-law. After he runs to Midyan, he's in Midyan for many years, he gets married to Zipporah, wonderful, and now he's shepherding his father-in-law's flock, he's in his father-in-law's business. I studied accounting, I worked for my father-in-law for one day. It wasn't supposed to be longer, I just helped him out for one day. And here, and it was fine, went fine, paid me on time. So Moshe is working for his father-in-law. Vayinhag es tzon achar hamidbar veivo el har alokim choreva. So a few interests. So this is the burning bush. Vayera malach Hashem ela balabas esh b'toch hasne. A malach appears to him in the midst of the bush. Ayar vihine hasne boer ba'esh v'hasne einenu ukal. Hasne einenu ukal. The sne was not being consumed. Einenu ukal. Perhaps, right? That's the origin of the word einikal. If you have not just a child but grandchildren, einiklach, that shows that we're not going to be consumed. There's going to be continuity for the Jewish people. It's interesting in Pasuk Bet, Perek Gimel Pasuk Bet, that you have very often in this parsha, Vayar. It says that Moshe sees, and the bush was burning but wasn't being consumed. Asur naver el, let me see. Vayar Hashem kisar lorot, and Hashem sees. You saw it in the previous. In the previous parak, when he sees Vayar ish mitzri ma'ke ish ivri me'achav, Vayar ki ein ish, and it kind of reminds us about Avraham also, right? It says about Avraham Vayar et hamakom erachok, Vayera elav Hashem, and Vayar he sees the travelers, and Vayar he sees a second time. Vayar appears very often by Avraham, it appears very often by Moshe, and the Medrash has this comment in the context of Avram, also in the context of Yosef, that a Jew should be from those who are the Roim, for those who are the Roim. And when Avram sees, it says, Vayar tamakom mirachok, so it says that he saw a cloud that was over the mountain. And he saw like a vision that this is something special. And then he asks Yitzhak, he says, do you see anything special? And Yitzhak says, yeah, I also see the cloud over the mountain. I see that's something really special. And then Avram turns to Eliezer and Yishmael and says, "Do you see anything?" They said, "No, we didn't see. We don't see anything. We don't see anything." I woke up this morning. My son said, "Did you feel the earthquake? Was there an earthquake?" I didn't feel the earthquake. He felt the earthquake. Okay, so you felt the earthquake. So you didn't feel it. So, but Avram and Yitzchak are able. Vayar, they're able to see, and Eliezer and Yishmael are not able to see. And Avram kind of says to Eliezer and Yishmael, right, that you're not able to see, so you stay here with the donkey. Stay here with the donkey. Because you don't deserve to move forward. What you see here is that the measure of a greatness of a Jew is the ability to see. It's to have a vision, right, to see beyond, right, to see beyond the instant. And so that, I don't know if it's prophecy or just to have to kind of see a situation and perceive the meaning of it. How does this relate to me? What does this ask of me at this time? So, and it also says by Yosef, when Yosef was being seduced by the wife of Potiphar, what does he see? He sees the must yukno shalaviv. He sees the image of his father in the window. And Eshet Potiphar says to Yosef, what do you see? And Yosef says, I am one of those who see and you don't see. What Yosef saw was that it's not that we don't just live in the here and now. A Jew has to have two ayins, right? Everyone has two ayins, two eyes. But ayin also stands for avar, is past, and ayin is atid, is the future. There was once a speaker in Beit Jacob who said it this way. He said, you have to live in the moment, right? You have to live in the here and now. 70%, he broke it up in percentages. I thought that was helpful. He said 70% you have to be in the here and now, and 15% with an eye on the past, and 15% with an eye on the future. I thought that was interesting. Maybe you have different percentages. But anyway, and so a Jew has two ayins. One ayin stands for avar, which is past. One ayin stands for atid. And Yosef saw the image of his father in the window, which is his values from the past. And he also says, according to the Medrash, he saw the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, that if he was going to go ahead and sin with the wife of Potiphar, his name was slowly vanishing from the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, but like Back to the Future, where Michael J. Fox is vanishing from the picture. So you get the reference. So here also, he saw that his name was vanishing from the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. So he was somebody who saw. He saw the past, and he saw the future, and that informed his decisions and enabled him to make the courageous, correct decision in the present. With all the temptations and influences and distractions, right? So it takes a village. It takes the past and the future and your strong values to make the right decisions. Like Avraham was somebody, Vayar Tamakam Erochok, and like Yosef, it says, I'm min haroim. So here also, it says about Moshe that he saw. He saw the Mitzri beating upon the Jew, and he saw and understood what that required of him. And here it says, "Vayar v'hine hasne boer ba'esh, hasne inenu ikal." V'yomer Moshe, asura na ve'ere tamera gadol hazeh. Let me turn aside to see this great vision. Madua lo yivar hasne. Why the sne is not being consumed? Look at this pasuk. Vayar Hashem kisar lirot. Hashem saw that Moshe had turned aside to see. So it sounds like, if you read the psukim closely, it sounds like there's a possibility that Moshe would not have turned to the side to look. You know, maybe in that arid environment, maybe brush fires were a common occurrence. Maybe it wasn't, you know, he could have just continued on shepherding the flock. And if he wouldn't have looked, and if he wouldn't have cared enough to ask the questions, right? What does it say? Hashem says that he saw that Moshe turned aside to look. This is somebody who I could speak to. This is somebody who could be a great leader. Moshe's perception was a sign that he would be a great leader. He noticed that which is often overlooked. And that's also, right, that's our job to be able to see maybe underneath the surface and to see the hand of Hashem, even if it is not always explicit. Vayar Hashem kisar lerot, so then Hashem speaks to Moshe. He speaks to him also in stages. First it's the malach. You know, if you actually see, it says that there was, he sees the fire. Then you could say that the malach appears to him, and then Hashem appears to him. That's how Rabbeinu Bechaya reads the psukim, that it was in stages. That first it says Vayera Malach Hashem. So first he saw Balabase. So first he saw the fire, then he saw the Malach Hashem, and then a pasuk later says Vayar Hashem, and that Hashem or Elohim spoke to Moshe. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says that's another idea, which is that if you want to accomplish something, even though your instinct is you want to do it all at once, that very often you can be more successful if you do something in stages, one step at a time. And when it comes to tshuva also, right, and we talk about Tzaseres Mei Tshuva during the year also, certainly you can talk about tshuva, where Hashem doesn't require us to change everything around in one fell swoop. Hashem wants us, and the way of the world is to take small steps, and to be heading in the right direction. And one moment you could be going in one direction, and then you do a small turn, and you start taking little steps, and little things, they build upon one another, and you're heading in an entirely different direction. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that you see from here that things happen in life in stages. He actually brings an analogy of you wake up in the morning, and you turn on the light. You can't handle the brightness of the light right away. You have to slowly adjust yourself to be able to appreciate the light. The Chafetz Chaim points this out on the Gemara that says that if you're in Beverly Hills or in Chutz Laretz, you have to daven towards Eretz Yisrael. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you daven towards Yerushalayim. If you're in Yerushalayim, then you face towards the Har HaBayit or the Kotel. If you're by the Kotel, the Har HaBayit, you face towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, and by the way, that means it's not that you face east. Yeah, if you're in LA, you face east, because that's the quickest route. If you would go west, yeah, your tefillos will get there eventually, but it'll take much longer. So you face east. But remember, Rivki, we were in the United Emirates, and how did we daven? We davened west. We davened west. Or if you're in Katsurin, you daven south. That's right. So you've really faced towards Eretz Yisrael wherever you are in the world. And you also, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, then you face towards Yerushalayim. So why doesn't the Gemara simply say, and it quotes Psukim to, you know, for all these different halachos, but why doesn't the Gemara simply say, wherever you are in the world, face the Holy of Holies? Then you don't need all these different lines. Right, if you're in Chutz Laretz, face Eretz Yisrael. If you're Eretz Yisrael, face Yerushalayim. If Yerushalayim, face... No, we know that we're trying to get our prayers to the Holy of Holies, and that's the conduit through which our prayers go up to Shemayim. So why not just say, wherever you are, go to the Holy of Holies? Chafetz Chaim says, you see from here that a Jew, a human being, should always do things in stages. And you have to understand whatever the circumstances are, right, to take upon yourself what you could achieve. And there's a principle in the Gemara, tafasta mu'at tafasta, that if you take upon yourself a small amount, then you could be successful, when often if you take upon yourself a big amount, you try to grab a lot of ice from the ice machine, you'll end up with nothing. I'm very into ice. I don't know about you. I like ice. So if you take a lot of ice, you end up with nothing. But you grab a few pieces, take a few with the scoop, you get the few pieces. Tafasta mu'at tafasta. That's the expression of the Gemara. And so that's what the Chafetz Chaim says. If you were in Beverly Hills, you're in Beverly Hills now, and you're davening, and you try to get to the Holy of Holies, that's a hard leap to make. So better if you're in Chutz Laretz, try to get psychologically, intellectually to Eretz Yisrael. Face Eretz Yisrael. Then if you're in Eretz Yisrael, either physically in Eretz Yisrael or if you've already brought yourself to be in Eretz Yisrael, your conscience is Eretz Yisrael, then go to Yerushalayim, face Yerushalayim. If you're Yerushalayim, then face the Har HaBayis and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So you see that we should do things in steps. We're not required, and often it'll be unsuccessful. We try to do things in one fell swoop. You learn that from that Gemara about davening. And we learn that here, Rabbeinu Bechaya says, from the fact that it's first it's the fire, then he sees the malach, and then he sees Hashem. Just two more points, and then I want to get your thoughts and questions. The first thing is that in this conversation, Hashem says to Moshe, right, that I want you to take Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim. I want you to go back to Egypt. And I want you to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Vayomer Moshe Elokim, Moshe says, Mi Anochi, who am I? Kelech El Paro, I'm a simple shepherd living here in Midian. V'chiyotzi es Bnei Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. And Hashem says, Ki Emach, I'm going to be with you. V'zeh lecha ot ki Anochi shalaticha. So a few different interesting points here. One thing that really needs a whole shiur is that Hashem is sending Moshe on a mission. And Hashem is saying to Moshe, I'm together with you on the mission. And similarly, all of us are here in this world, and we have a mission to achieve. And Hashem is together with us on the mission. Even though with this mission of Moshe, it was a clear game plan in terms of what the mission entailed, for us in our lives, it's not as clear what the mission is, but you just observe Torah mitzvot, be the best you could be, and Hashem is with you on the mission. That's number one. Number two, Moshe says back to Hashem, He says, Lo ish devarim anochi. He says, I'm not a man of words, right? Lo ish devarim anochi. So I don't have the ability. I don't have the ability to do it. Actually, says it a little bit later. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud, page 308. V'yomer Moshe Hashem, Lo ish devarim anochi. Interestingly, and we could also learn this in Sefer Dvarim. How does Sefer Dvarim begin? Eile Dvarim Asher Dibar Moshe. These are the words that Moshe spoke, and that's 40 years later. And Moshe already has, 40 years later, spoiler alert, right? But Moshe has taken Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim. He's brought them the Torah. He's built the Mishkan. And now they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe gives this stirring farewell address, which is most of Sefer Dvarim. What's remarkable is that Moshe Rabbeinu, who described himself here by the burning bush, as Lo ish devarim anochi, I'm not a man of words. I don't have what it takes. Ultimately, he's able to. It's remarkable that Moshe develops to become not only a great leader, but he's this masterful orator who is able to take Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, and he's able to become a man of words. Lo ish devarim anochi here, Eila hadvarim asher diber Moshe. And that's a very, very important lesson for all of us, that everyone is blessed with unique talents and abilities. And we could also, and it's very, very important not to, look, you have to be realistic about your abilities and resources. But a lot of times, we limit our abilities, and we have self-doubt, and we don't think we have what it takes. And it's certainly human to have those feelings. And Moshe Rabbeinu had those feelings. But if we have faith in Hashem, and we believe in ourselves as well, we could often exceed the own expectations that we have of ourselves. We can go beyond those limitations. Like Bnei Israel came out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is not just a land, but it also means Mitzarim. It's limits. It's boundaries. I think it's Sivan Rahav Meir who said that, she quoted some Hasidic master as saying that the job of every single person is to take herself or himself out of Mitzrayim. We're on a mission in this world, and Moshe Rabbeinu was on a mission, and this Sefer and this Parsha is not just about Bnei Israel beginning to take themselves out of Mitzrayim, but it's Moshe Rabbeinu taking himself out of these perceived limitations that he has of himself. I can't do it. Who am I? I'm just a shepherd. I'm not a person of words. And every single person, you have to take yourself out of that way of thinking, to take yourself out of Mitzrayim, and to be able to reach your potential and achieve your mission that you have in this world. And the last thought that I have here in this section is Moshe Rabbeinu says, "What's your name?" Right? He says that Bnei Israel are going to ask me, "What's your name?" You have here in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Gimel. So back, we're Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud Gimel, that Hashem says, "I'm going to send you to take Bnei Israel out." Moshe says, "Bnei Israel are going to ask me, okay, what's the name of the God? What should I tell them?" Hashem says back to Moshe, "Eye Asher Eye," which is, "I shall be as I shall be." Okay, that's a lot to talk about here. But one question that the Sfas Emes asks is, I thought Moshe already knew Hashem's name. Well, according to the Medrash, how did Moshe kill the Egyptian? One opinion says he killed the Egyptian way back, years earlier. It could be 50, 60 years earlier, it could be. Miriam, you asked me how old he was. I'm thinking he was around 20 years old at the time that the early incidents happened. But now he's 80 at the time of the burning bush. And it could be for many, many years he was in Midian. There's different Midrashim that maybe he was a king, either over Midian or over some of that region there. A lot of interesting discussion about those years. But if we go back, how did Moshe Rabbeinu kill the Egyptian early on? One opinion says he killed him with his fist. Good old-fashioned way. Second opinion says he killed him with a magrefa, with this agricultural tool that that Bnei Yisrael were using during their slavery, he was able to take that and use that to kill the Egyptian. And the third opinion is that he killed the Egyptian with the Shem Hashem, with the name of Hashem. What's the support for that? Because the next day, it says that he sees two people fighting. Vayomer l'Rasha, lama takeriecha? He says to the Rasha, why are you hitting your friend? Or why are you even raising your hand to strike your friend? Vayomer, and what do these Jews respond back? And it could be that these are Dustin Vaviram. Vayomer, mi samcha l'ish? Halahargeni atomer, who died and made you king, number one. And number two, halahargeni atomer. Are you going to kill us? Kasher haraktes hamitzri. So Rashi and the Mefarshim kind of find it intriguing that it says halahargeni atomer. Are you saying that you're going to kill us through speech? The way you killed the Egyptian yesterday? And Rashi says, mikanon lemedim, Shaharga b'shem ha'mafurash. You see from here that he killed, right? That he killed with the shem ha'mafurash, with the divine name. And so, so you see that Moshe Rabbeinu knows the name of Hashem.
How did he know about Hashem?
Okay, how did he know of Hashem? But he knows something about the Shem Hashem according to Rashi, and he killed the Egyptian with the name of Hashem. So how can Rashi offer that explanation? If later on it says Moshe asked Hashem his name, it says the Sfas Emes that there's two kinds of divine. That's right. There's the different names of Hashem. Right. That's the people who sell holy water for $72 based on the 72 letter name of Hashem. Ah, there's also a 4 letter name of Hashem, but then it'll be lower profits if you sell water for $4. So there's different names of Hashem. That's true. But the Sfas Emes says that there's a Shem HaMafurash, a divine name that's used to destroy, and there's a Shem HaMafurash, a divine name that's used to build. Moshe only knew about the former name. He understood the name of Hashem, right? That and even though the killing of the Egyptian was heroic and it was justified, it did involve a loss of life. And there are times where there needs to be destruction when it's justified. But Moshe Rabbeinu understood about that component of Hashem that punishes, that exhibits harshness, that destroys. And what Moshe was yearning for and what he wanted to learn was the name of God that's used to build, to create, and to redeem the people. And of course we know that, and that's really... Right, Hashem is Adin, Hashem is Rachamim. And that's the way we understand the name of God, which is really our relation with God and our Jewish identity. That there's a time to destroy, but really our focus is on building. Our focus is on building. Our focus is on raising up other people, is supporting other people. And of course, we don't destroy, we defend. We defend when necessary. We get engaged in a war like we are in now against a ruthless and savage enemy, because that's necessary to protect our people and to also protect the world. And so there's a time, right? There's a time for war, and there's a time for the using that Shem HaMafurash. But our focus is, and what Moshe wanted to know, is our focus is on building, on growing, on supporting. Because that's really ultimately what we want to do, for there to be peace and for there to be growth, and for us to continue building as a community. That's why, you know, if we have simchas in the community, right, our enemies really try to destroy, and we have to continue always to build using that Shem HaMafurash. Those are a number of ideas. I want to hear your thoughts. This is Moshe Rabbeinu's growth and development. He's already raised in a home of arevut, of caring for one another. Vayar kienish, he's able to, what is it, vayar kienish? He's able to think strategically and practically. Number two is he thinks about future implications. That's the vayar, he sees up ahead. And also he's able to have the courage to take a stand when nobody else was willing to do so. But moreover, of Yar Kenish, there was a struggle in his identity. Ba'yifin ko v'ko. But Moshe ultimately understands his identity, and he steps up as a Jewish leader in the area of fighting anti-Semitism, of promoting Achdut, and also trying to be a light into the nations. The shepherds had nothing to do with him. With these women and the shepherds. Oh, maybe he had an eye already on one of the girls. I mean, maybe, but these people had nothing to do with him. And yet he gets involved because it's not just we care about our own and we care about our Achdus, but it's also important to help others and to be a light unto the nations and to support the needs and people of the world. And then here also, in this section, that Moshe does it in stages, recognizes that he's on a mission, and he has self-doubt, but ultimately, by learning the name of Hashem, he's able to reach his potential to become the great leader, to become the great leader of Israel. Yes, thoughts. I think, Chana, I'm not sure if you still had a thought, or you already forgot what you wanted to say. Oh, you see, that's why I don't take the questions right away, because I, this way.
That's good.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, yeah.
Leona gave me an answer that I wanted.